Good day, and welcome to iStar Financial's third quarter 2013 earnings call. If you need assistance during today's call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Jason Fooks, Vice President of Investor Relations and Marketing. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Art, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today to review iStar Financial's third quarter 2013 earnings report. With me today are Jay Sugarman, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and Dave DeStasso, our Chief Financial Officer. This morning's call is being webcast on our website at istarfinancial.com in the investor relations section. There'll be a replay of the call beginning at 12:30 P.M. Eastern Time today. The dial-in for the replay is 1-800-475-6701 with a confirmation code of 305829. Before I turn the call over to Jay, I'd like to remind everyone that statements in this earnings call which are not historical facts will be forward-looking. iStar Financial's actual results may differ materially from these forward-looking statements, and the risk factors that could cause these differences are detailed in our SEC reports. In addition, as stated more fully in our SEC reports, iStar disclaims any intent or obligation to update these forward-looking statements except as expressly required by law. Now I'd like to turn the call over to iStar's Chairman and CEO, Jay Sugarman. Jay?
Thanks, Jason, and thank all of you for joining us this morning. During the third quarter, our main focus was on ramping up investment activity, and we saw good results with over $400 million in new transactions put under a letter of intent and over $100 million of funding on investments made in prior quarters. We still have some $700 million of cash sitting idly on the balance sheet, so these new fundings and potential investments should improve the profitability of the company once fully deployed. We also continue to whittle away at the remaining asset issues in the portfolio. While there will be both good and not so good surprises, on the whole, we are making progress. On the land front, the story is still moving forward, with our teams on the East and West Coast beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel on a number of arduous re-entitlement processes. Nothing is done till it's done, but we are hopeful that 2014 will be the beginning of a significantly more active period in the land book. We continue to add personnel as we prepare for a larger number of the projects to get underway in the coming quarters. Here's a quick overview of our various businesses. Our real estate finance book continued to see repayments outpace new fundings in the quarter, but that relationship should start leveling out and begin going the other way. The good news is we've almost fully funded our $146 million preferred investment in Landmark Apartment Trust, which helped boost the yield on the performing loan portfolio to 8% from 7% last quarter. We hope to have a good portion of the letters of intent close in the fourth quarter as well to help boost overall revenue in the segment as we head into 2014. Segment profit was $6 million for the quarter. The net lease book remains stable, with strong occupancy and long lease terms still in place. Segment profit was $9 million for the quarter. We're still out competing for new deals and have seen some interest from outside capital to join with us, so we look forward to being able to push that business a little faster going forward. Profit in the operating portfolio saw a step down in contribution from the condominium assets, which should remain at a solid level for coming quarters. Fewer units remaining in our higher priced projects in Miami and New York will cap profits, but we should see good sales in other projects as we move to maximize the value of the remaining portfolio. Segment profit was $18 million as our project managers continue to push on the transitional commercial asset portfolio, creating net absorption of approximately 100,000 sq ft this quarter and driving yields on the transitional portfolio up from 2.9%-3.7%. The land portfolio team remains optimistic about market conditions in many of our key markets, but results will remain negative until we bring more projects online, with segment profit this quarter a negative $19 million. While we are keeping an eye on interest rates and affordability, the next few quarters should see increased activity and more engagement with national builders. Once we've completed and signed deals, we'll begin discussing those relationships in more detail. Let me turn it over now to Dave to review the numbers for the quarter. Dave?
Thanks, Jay, and good morning, everyone. Let me begin by discussing our financial results for the third quarter of 2013 and capital markets activities before moving on to discuss investments and the performance of our business segments. For the quarter, our adjusted income was a loss of $7 million, or 9 cents per common share, compared to a loss of $26 million, or 31 cents for the same quarter last year. Contributing to the year-over-year improvement to adjusted income was a $28 million decrease in interest expense as a result of paydowns on our secured facilities and debt refinancings at lower rates, which has allowed us to meaningfully reduce overall interest expense. At the same time, revenues year-over-year have remained flat as the reduction in interest income, which stems from our smaller real estate finance portfolio, was offset by an increase in operating lease income due to the increased size of our operating properties portfolio and the leasing progress we've been achieving in that segment. We recognized gains from the sale of one of our operating properties, which I'll discuss further, while earning less from equity method investments as a result of the sale of our stake in L&R during the second quarter of this year. Our net loss allocable to common shareholders for the quarter was $31 million, or 36 cents per diluted common share, compared to a loss of $72 million, or 86 cents per diluted common share for the same period last year. The year-over-year improvement was additionally due to the $10 million net recovery of loan loss reserves this quarter versus a $17 million provision in the third quarter of 2012. During the third quarter, we paid off the remaining balance on the A1 tranche of our 2012 secured credit facility and repaid $30 million on the A2 tranche, bringing the remaining outstanding balance to $440 million. Also during the quarter, we repaid $121 million on our 2013 secured credit facility, bringing the remaining balance to $1.5 billion at the end of the quarter. We've continued to make progress on lowering our cost of capital. Our weighted average cost of debt for the third quarter was 5.7%, an improvement from 6% for the second quarter and 6.5% for the third quarter of last year. Our leverage for the third quarter was 1.9 times, a decrease from 2 times at the end of the second quarter, and slightly below our targeted range of 2 to 2.5 times. In addition, during the quarter, we purchased an interest rate cap in order to reduce our variable rate exposure. This $500 million notional hedge is effective should LIBOR rise above 1% and has a term beginning in July 2014 and lasting 3 years. Let me turn now to investment activity in our real estate and loan portfolios. As Jay discussed, we completed letters of intent for over $400 million of new investments recently, which, if closed, would begin funding during the fourth quarter. During the third quarter, we funded $116 million of investments, primarily within our real estate finance portfolio. We generated $346 million of proceeds from our portfolio during this quarter, which included $239 million from repayments and sales of loans in our real estate finance portfolio, $98 million from sales of operating properties, and $9 million from sales of assets across other segments. At the end of the quarter, we had over $700 million of cash. This balance will allow us to finance new investments in our real estate finance and net lease portfolios and fund capital expenditures in our operating and land segments. At September 30, 2013, our total portfolio had a carrying value of $5.2 billion, gross of $439 million of accumulated depreciation, and $28 million of general loan loss reserves. Let me discuss the activity in each of our four business segments. Our real estate finance portfolio totaled $1.4 billion at the end of the quarter. This includes $1.2 billion of performing loans that had a weighted average LTV of 73% and a weighted average maturity of just under 3 years. They were comprised of $630 million of first mortgages or senior loans and $526 million of mezzanine or subordinated debt. The performing loans generated a weighted average effective yield for the quarter of 8%. At the end of the quarter, we had $235 million of non-performing loans, or NPLs, down from $370 million at the end of the second quarter. Our remaining NPLs are mainly comprised of 41% land, 33% entertainment, and 11% retail. For the quarter, the provision for loan losses was a net recovery of $10 million, compared to a $5 million provision for loan losses last quarter. Our total reserve for loan losses is $380 million, consisting of $352 million of asset-specific reserves and $28 million of general reserves. We expect that the rate of provisions and a level of NPLs will continue to fluctuate. Next, I'll discuss our net lease portfolio. At the end of the quarter, we had $1.7 billion of net lease assets, gross of $335 million of accumulated depreciation. Our net lease portfolio totaled 20 million square feet across 34 states. Our net lease portfolio was 95% leased at the end of the quarter, with a weighted average remaining lease term of 12 years. During the quarter, we signed two net leases covering approximately 150,000 square feet. For the quarter, our occupied net lease assets generated an unleveraged weighted average effective yield of 7.9%, while our total net lease portfolio generated an unleveraged weighted average effective yield of 7.4%. Let me now turn to our operating properties portfolio. Our operating properties totaled $1.1 billion, gross of $100 million of accumulated depreciation. The portfolio was comprised of $802 million of commercial and $255 million of residential real estate properties. We invested $17 million in these operating properties during the quarter. The commercial properties represent a diverse pool of 29 real estate assets across a broad range of geographies and property types, such as office, retail, and hotel. They generated $31 million of revenue, offset by $20 million of expenses during the quarter. At the end of the quarter, we had $158 million of stabilized commercial operating properties. The stabilized properties were 85% leased, resulting in a 9.6 unleveraged weighted average effective yield for the quarter. During the quarter, we generated $37 million of proceeds from the sale of stabilized commercial operating properties, which resulted in a $9 million gain. The remaining $644 million of commercial operating properties are transitional real estate properties that were 58% leased and generated a 3.7% unleveraged weighted average effective yield for the quarter. We are actively seeking to lease up these properties to maximize their value. During the quarter, we executed approximately 35 commercial operating property leases covering approximately 200,000 square feet. The residential operating properties were comprised of 702 condominium units remaining in inventory at the end of the quarter. These units are generally located in projects characterized as luxury buildings in major cities throughout the United States. During the quarter, we sold 109 condos for $61 million in proceeds, resulting in $15 million of income, offset by $5 million of expenses and $6 million of impairments. That brings me to our land portfolio. At the end of the quarter, our land portfolio totaled $976 million and included 11 master plan communities, 9 infill land parcels, and 6 waterfront land parcels. Master plan communities generally represent large-scale residential projects that we plan to entitle, plan, and develop. We currently have entitlements at these projects for more than 25,000 lots. Our infill and waterfront parcels are currently entitled for 6,000 residential units, and select projects include commercial, retail, and office space. The projects in the portfolio are well diversified, with our largest exposures in California, the New York metro area, Florida, and several markets in the Mid-Atlantic and Southwest regions. During the quarter, we invested $11 million into our land portfolio through capital expenditures. At the end of the quarter, 6 of these land projects were in production, with sales activity having begun, 12 were in development and actively seeking entitlements, and 8 were in the pre-development phase. With that, let me turn it back to Jay. Jay?
Thanks, Dave. You know, Dave mentioned some interest rate protection we put on this quarter. With rates low and favorable conditions in the real estate markets, we took the opportunity to protect somewhat against the rise in rates beginning later next year. As long as rates stay low, we're likely to find a lot of good spread opportunities in the market. So this was a way to stretch that low rate environment out on about $500 million so we can work part of the new investment book with more interest rate certainty. I look forward to closing some more deals in our pipeline and using that protection to our advantage in the coming quarters. With that, let's go ahead and open it up for questions. Operator?
Thank you. Today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. To ask a question, please press star one at this time. We will take as many questions as time permits and proceed in order that you signal us. Once again, please press star one to ask a question. We will pause just a moment to assemble the roster. And our first question comes from the line of Michael Kim with CRT Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question and a nice quarter. Jay, in your prepared remarks, you talked about your team seeing the light at the end of the tunnel for some of the land projects. Now, I know your team's made a lot of progress with the waterfront land assets, but just kind of curious, what are you seeing for the master plan communities or what sort of project milestones have you hit that's kind of giving you better visibility for some of these projects?
Mike, yeah, I'd say a couple things. One, on the East Coast, you know, we've been able to push some of the projects forward. Feeling pretty good that 2014 will have some material milestones that we can share with you. I think in terms of just the re-entitlement processes, you know, Southern California has been always been a tough place, continues to be a tough place. We've got some very valuable land there that we're trying to do some smart things with, in one case upzoning and another case downzoning. But those have been long, relatively difficult processes. Again, I feel like both of them are in the home stretch, but, you know, we definitely don't want to count our chickens before they're hatched. So all we can say at this point is it feels good. I think our guys have done a great job kind of getting us to the two-yard line. Now we got to push it across.
Is that more of a function of just local municipalities generally being more willing to work on these projects with you, or you know, like a sense of any change in terms of at the local level?
I wish I could say that. I don't really think there's been a change. I think it's just been a lot of hard work between the local zoning boards and ourselves and the planning commissions.
Right.
Yeah, these are meaningful projects in each of these communities, and a lot of people have a say on them, and so you got to go through the process that gives everybody a voice, and sometimes that just takes a long time.
Sure. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Just on the new originations and investments, I mean, great to see the pipeline so large. I was just wondering if you could provide some details on sort of the types of investments that are part of the pipeline. Should we expect the return profiles to be, you know, somewhat similar in nature to the Landmark preferred investment? Just to give us a sense of, kind of what's in the pipeline right now.
Yeah, I don't want to go into too much detail, but, you know, as we said in the past, they tend to be larger deals. They're going to be in, you know, major metro markets. These are primarily in the, I'm going to call it the L7, L800 range.
Okay.
LIBOR plus 800, LIBOR plus 700. So not quite the yield on the Landmark deal, but we think on a risk-adjusted basis, quite attractive. Some good floating rate exposure. We continue to poke around in the net lease world. Those kind of deals are still in the, 7 cap range. It's a tougher market these days, but leverage is pretty attractive in that sector as well. So you can push the return on equities up into the double digits with bumps on those. That can, be a nice place to put capital. So right now we're trying to pick and choose among, the things we've historically played in. We've done a lot with the existing book. As you saw this quarter, we had some nice resolutions on a number of deals in the U.S.
Yeah.
Tougher on two deals in Europe that look like they're going to end up with less favorable resolutions, but we may get an interesting financing opportunity out of one of those. So, we've got a large field to pick from, and we're doing, as fast as we can with the kind of prudence you'd like to see.
Right. And some of the new investments that you have in the pipeline, I mean, what sort of, weighted average duration, can we expect, or are you kind of looking at, with or without, maturity extension option?
Yeah, as you might expect, the floaters are going to be relatively short, call it 2 to 3 years on average duration.
Okay.
Net lease stuff will be longer.
Yeah, understood. Okay, great. And you touched on the NPL balance. Obviously you guys are well ahead of the guidance that you provided earlier this year. Just kind of curious, as you look forward, how much opportunity or visibility do you have in terms of additional resolutions within, the next 6 to 9 months? Is that still just a work in process, or do you have better visibility on the rest of the NPL book?
I think, as I said, we are going to see some good outcomes. We're probably going to see some not so good outcomes, but overall the number of issues is shrinking.
Yeah.
We definitely have a hope here that the good surprises will outpace the bad ones, and I think that's been our experience to date, and we continue to work hard on the remaining ones, but we've never been able to predict exactly when those resolutions will occur.
Yeah.
But hopefully we're getting to the end of that part of the curve, and by the end of 2014, we'll hope, most of that list has been cleaned up.
Understood. All right, great. Thank you very much. I'll get back in the queue.
And as a reminder, if you have a question or comment, please press star 1 at this time. One moment, please. And our next question comes from the line of Jonathan Fillman with Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just was wondering, Jay, if you could just talk about deployment of the cash on the balance sheet and how you see that proceeding in moving it closer to earnings break-even or even profitability, what your current thoughts are on that subject.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you can't have $700 million of unproductive capital, sitting around and make progress. So we are looking to get that money deployed. The run-up to some of the deals has been longer than we expected. As you can imagine, we like complexity. On the one hand, it allows us to generate excess returns. On the other hand, it often means, longer lead times in getting that capital deployed. We hope, usually what happens is people get a little bit of pressure to close by year end, so we would expect, to get most of that stuff under contract today, closed by the end of next quarter, but we've still got work to do, Jonathan. We've got, money coming in every day. So as you can see from Dave's comments, we're deleveraging, probably even beyond where we'd like to be. Putting the cash back to work will help that issue. So it's on us to get that capital deployed in places that are attractive. And we do think, even at the kind of high single-digit, low double-digit numbers we're thinking, $700 million deployed is $70 million of earnings. That's a big step towards profitability for us. So a combination of knocking down the NPLs and deploying that capital are the two biggest levers to getting us, over the hump.
Got it. Thanks. That's very helpful. And then just one follow-up question, which goes along with that, and that is just was wondering, where a dividend lies in terms of your list of priorities, and if that's, a near medium-term goal. And I guess finally, do the various your various debt securities prohibit that at this time?
I think it's twofold. As you know, we have a fairly large NOL to utilize, which we think is a pretty attractive way to retain capital. It's probably our cheapest form of retained capital. So we do think as earnings start to kick in, we aren't going to immediately go to dividend, even if our debt would allow it. There are some restrictions in the debt. But I think the overarching theme here is to rebuild the equity capital base, begin growing the investment side of the business, and then look to reinstate that dividend once once we effectively utilize the NOL to the greatest extent possible.
Got it. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Jonathan.
And our next question is from the line of Jade Rahmani with KBW. Please go ahead. You're open.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the question. I wanted to find out if you could give any color on what drove the loan loss reversal and also the asset impairment, and if you could say whether those two items were related at all.
Yeah, they're not related. As I said, we had a couple nice resolutions in the U.S. And a couple that looked not so good in Europe, and the net of that was a reversal for us. So that was a good thing. The impairment was unfortunate. We had a piece of collateral under contract, thought the deal was done, just couldn't get the final deal closed, which means we're back to the drawing board, pushes out the resolution date, which has to be discounted at a market rate. And so, you know, we'll probably get the same amount of dollars at the end of the day, but it'll be out in the future, and we had to mark that given the time value of money.
Great, thanks. That's helpful. Just regarding your pipeline, can you say, you mentioned refinance opportunities as well as new opportunities. Can you say what percentage of your pipeline is coming from existing borrower relationships and what percentage is directly sourced?
Yeah, I'd say the preponderance of what we have in shop right now is working on deals we have, you know, deep familiarity with, and actually have, you know, a relatively proprietary way to get into those deals. We will close a couple deals with, you know, new parties, which is good, but that's going to be a slower road for us. I think the markets are not uncompetitive, so we're trying to find angles and wedges into deals where we have some relationships or we have some knowledge. Those tend to be better priced and more interesting to us.
Thanks. And just a housekeeping item, the sequential increase in G&A expense, can you give any color on that?
Yeah, as you probably saw last year, we set up a bonus program that's tied to some adjusted EBITDA targets. We're tracking, you know, ahead of the target set at the beginning of the year, so there's an incremental bonus accrual that kicked in this quarter. You know, we can't say for sure whether that's going to play out, but it's, you know, getting close enough that we need to start accruing for it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jade.
Mr. Frooks, we have no further questions.
Great. Thanks, Art, and thanks to everyone for joining us this morning. As always, if you have any additional questions on today's earnings release, please feel free to contact me directly. Art, would you please read the conference call replay instructions once again?
Yes, I will. Ladies and gentlemen, this conference will be available from replay from 12:30 p.m. today through Tuesday, November 12th. To access the replay, dial 1-800-475-6701, and then you'll be prompt for an access code. The access code is 305-829. For international dialers, please dial 320-365-3844 and enter the same access code, 305-829. That does conclude your conference for today. Thank you for your participation, and thank you for using the AT&T Executive Teleconference Service. You may now disconnect.